Have you ever been in a pinch financially and had someone bail you out? Have you ever been in a tough place in your life when someone came along and gave you a hug at just the right time? Or have you ever done something for someone just because you could? I'm Brian Ellison. Today on Central Standard, the kindness of strangers. What motivates some people to be generous and compassionate, and why isn't everybody like that? We want to hear from you, Kansas City. When have you been the recipient or the giver of some random or not-so-random act of kindness, something big or small? What was its impact on your life and on the world around us? It's not all bad news out there. Kindness in Kansas City. Today on Central Standard, after the news. In an era of selfishness, at least that's what we're told, partisan politicians looking for every edge or advantage, stranger danger keeping us behind locked doors. But what if there's another narrative, a different story being told out there in the streets of Kansas City and in the homes and schools and workplaces of America? What if every day the dominant reality is that people are living with generosity, acting with compassion, being kind? This is Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. Good to be back with you today for a conversation about kindness, especially the kindness of strangers. Why do people help or give or love when they have nothing to gain in return? Is it biological? Is it spiritual? Is it mysterious or all of the above? In a few minutes, we'll hear about some recent intentional displays of kindness here in Kansas City and the impact on both the doers and the receivers of that kindness. We also want to hear from you. When's a time that you've been touched by the kindness of a stranger? Maybe even someone you've never met again. First, though, let me introduce our guest, Dr. James Doty. He's professor of neurosurgery and also director of the Center for Compassion and Altruism Research Education at Stanford University. He joins us from there in Palo Alto this morning. Good morning, Dr. Doty.
Hello, Brian. It's wonderful to be with you today.
Thanks for getting up early to be with us. So you're a medical school professor. You work in a world of solving medical mysteries and curing diseases. Why study kindness?
Well, if you really look at the core of essentially every religion and what drives the vast majority of people, the underpinning is compassion or kindness, if you will, which is compassion in action. And really, there's good reason for it if you look at our evolution, if you will, as a species.
Maybe it would help if we started by sort of defining some of these terms that we're using. I've been throwing around kindness. You said kindness is compassion in action. What is compassion?
Compassion, used by most scientists, is the recognition of the suffering of another and a desire to intervene and relieve that suffering.
Okay, and then your title, you work with the Center for Compassion and Altruism Research Education. What is altruism then?
Altruism is very similar, except typically in the context of altruism, aiding another, if you will, comes at a cost to the individual. So there's a subtle difference, although sometimes the terms are used interchangeably.
I see. So let's talk a little bit. We'll get to some specific examples here in just a few minutes. But maybe you can tell us from the position of a researcher, as a scientist, what exactly is happening when someone feels this impulse to be compassionate?
Well, as our species evolved, and so that, if you will, our brain could enlarge so that we would have something called theory of mind, which is the recognition that someone independent of us is actually having thoughts, or to have abstract thinking or complex language, the cost of that was that there was prolongation of our gestation and also a small litter, and that the product of that, us, required being taken care of for well over a decade, if not two, before we could independently function. And as a result, because the cost was so high with nominally very little benefit, there developed these incredible bonding mechanisms that are inherent in our DNA, which makes us attached, if you will, to a vulnerable or suffering individual, especially, obviously, our kin.
Hmm. And is that something that is true of everybody, or is this found proportionally at different levels in different people?
Well, that's a good question. In general, it is found in everyone, but recent research has indicated that the genetic expression, which relates to this and which is actually complex, though, can have different levels of expression, if you will, whereby in the context, as an example, in the expression of receptors for oxytocin, which is often termed the love or bonding hormone, there may be variability in those receptors such that with certain types of variations in that gene expression, some individuals may not have the same extent as others.
You mentioned evolution a moment ago. A paper that you wrote on this actually starts with a quote from Darwin. You're the co-author of that paper. He says, "Communities which included the greatest number of the most sympathetic members would flourish best and rear the greatest number of offspring." It suggests that people aren't just doing good for its own sake, but there's actually a benefit to the community and to their species, right?
No, that's absolutely correct. Robert Sapolsky at Stanford and others have clearly demonstrated this to be correct. It's interesting that many people quote Darwin to imply that survival really is survival of the fittest and most ruthless, but in fact, that's really not what he said. That was popularized by actually an economist who had his own reasons for interpreting Darwin's statement by the name of, I believe, Robert Spencer. But in fact, Darwin clearly said it is survival of the most, if you will, sympathetic. And in fact, as I indicated, scientific studies have borne this out. In fact, it is, for long-term survival at least, survival of the kindest.
Huh. So can you give us an example of that? Is there a time where a particular species, other than human beings, acts with kindness in such a way that it improves life for everybody?
Sure. There are examples of certain primate species. And in fact, the interesting example is while the alpha males are trying to intimidate other alpha males to take over territory, if you will, the beta males are actually procreating with the females who are sitting along the in the background.
How generous.
So they're... So there's one example, if you will. So sometimes you don't necessarily need to be the alpha male. So that's one example. And certainly even down to the level of insects, we see that cooperative behavior, the sacrificing of oneself for another, actually promotes the spread of those genes. And you can see that with ants. You can see that with bees and other types of insects as well.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR and KCUR.org. I'm Brian Ellison. We are talking today about kindness, not just among primate species and insects, but among people, especially people here in Kansas City. And today we want to invite our listeners to be an especially big part of our conversation. We'd love to hear from you about a time that you were touched by the kindness of a stranger. Maybe it's someone you never saw or heard from again. Maybe you did stay in touch. Maybe it was the start of a relationship. Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888 to share your stories of being the giver or the recipient of kindness. I want to introduce one of our guests today, Susie Hall. She is co-organizer of Kinder Kansas City, Kinder KC, a program of the Centurions Program, which is part of the Chamber of Commerce here in Kansas City. It's a new initiative, and she's going to tell us about it, cases of random act of kindness breaking out all over town. Susie, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, Brian.
So this was a one-time event that has managed to live on. Tell us, what is Kinder Kansas City?
Well, Kinder Kansas City was on June 11th, and it was a day where the group of 80 Centurions were sent with a charge to go out into Kansas City and spread kindness.
Now, let me stop you right there. Who are the Centurions?
The Centurions is a leadership program sponsored by the Greater Kansas City Chamber of Commerce. And the three tenets of the program are learn, serve, and lead. So throughout the year, we learn about the various topics facing our city. We perform community service hours, and then we also work on our leadership skills.
All right. So this was a particular program of this group of people. What did you do on June 11th?
Well, it is termed a wild card day, where the group shows up and they have no idea what they'll be doing for the day. And so everybody arrived about 9 o'clock, and we gave them a charge for the day to go out in Kansas City and spread kindness. We really put very little rules around the day. We told them to use their creative, whatever they wanted to do, and go out and just spread kindness. Kept it simple like that.
So what sorts of things did people do?
They went out and had a tremendous day. They went to laundromats. They paid for people's laundry. They went to thrift stores and put dollar bills in pockets of jeans waiting to be purchased. They went to the parks. They purchased popsicles for kids playing at the park and practicing soccer. They went by a coworker's house who was going through a bone marrow transplant, and they decorated the outside with balloons just to give that coworker a little bit of a pick-me-up for the day, and a variety of other things.
So all of these acts, some of those sound like they might have been really helping people in need. Some of them sound like they were just, well, random.
Completely, completely. And, you know, I think what we found interesting is the groups, when they started out, most of them are very successful professionals, and they said, what can we do to plan the day? And then as they went out in the day, I think they found that the random acts and the things where they just saw people out who either needed a smile or something like that were almost the ones that meant more to them throughout the day, too.
And when you say they meant more to them, the people who received them, what did it all mean to the people who were doing these acts of kindness?
I think that they would tell you that they came back at the end of the day just completely energized, and also I think they had a deeper thought of, well, why can't I continue this when I go back to work tomorrow or just in my daily lives? And I know us on the planning committee, we found as we started doing our research on the science of happiness and the science of kindness that we were much more aware of the kind things that people did for us every day as we went through our daily lives, too.
If you want to share your stories of kindness, giving or receiving, email us at centralstandard@kcur.org, or you can call us at 816-235-2888. Dr. James Doty of Stanford University, you've heard, and we all have heard, about random acts of kindness. How do they fit into this this larger story of compassion and altruism?
Well, I think you have to understand, I mean, as a species, our default mode is to be kind and compassionate, actually. Unfortunately, in our modern society, it's a little bit more difficult to do that. What we know is that there are centers in our brain, our pleasure centers, if you will, which respond to what is termed hedonic stimuli.
Hedonic as in like hedonism.
Exactly, okay. Such as sex, food, money. They're actually the same areas that respond in the context of being kind or caring for another, except that with hedonic type of pleasure stimuli, typically that response is very short-lived, and it results in craving, while eudaimonic, or the type associated with kindness or compassion, are much more sustained and longer lasting.
Hmm. Now, do you feel like there's a difference between the kind of the feeling or the biological response that comes from, say, helping someone who you are in a long-term relationship with versus something like what we're hearing about from Kinder KC, this, you know, paying for someone's laundry at the laundromat?
Well, certainly, I think for most individuals, it's much easier to care for someone that you're either related to or have some sort of a relationship to But that being said, there is no question that the same pathways which result in a, if you will, feeling of goodness or happiness are the same as though when you help a stranger. So I think they are the same pathways. And the reality is when you perform these types of acts, clearly it is helpful to the individual. But in the context of mental, physical health and longevity, it significantly is a positive effect on the individual doing the giving, if you will.
Wait, so you actually are healthier if you're generous and kind?
Absolutely, no question about it. In fact, there have been a few studies now done among volunteers over the age of 65, actually monitoring the number of hours volunteering, if you will. And the studies show that in these individuals, they have a significant increase in longevity up to twofold compared to their peers who do not.
Wow.
With a couple of exceptions. The interesting thing, to receive that benefit, though, there has to be authenticity behind the motivation. As an example, if during the surveys, the individual stated, well, I'm really only doing this to get some sort of recognition or to look better in the eyes of people I know, then they actually don't get the benefit. So there has to be authenticity to receive these types of benefit.
Well, and that's sort of the question that comes to mind is, now that you are telling us all that there's a benefit to being generous or to being compassionate, can we actually do it with authenticity if we know that we're going to get something out of it? In the immortal words of the musical Avenue Q, when you help others, you can't help helping yourself.
And it's, in fact, this is very similar to a quote by the Dalai Lama, who says, if you want to be happy, be compassionate to others. If you want to make others happy, be compassionate. So it's true. On a physiologic level or a DNA expression level, caring for others actually results in significant mental and physical benefits and, in fact, decreases inflammation, which we are now understanding to be one of the greatest causes of poor health.
Actually decreases inflammation. There's a physical effect on the body when you're compassionate.
Absolutely, no question about it. And in fact, there are studies that have been shown that even with, if you will, a few hours of intentful meditation on caring for others, you can actually see changes, epigenetic effects in regard to markers of inflammation.
That's Dr. James Doty, neurosurgery professor, as well as director of the Center for Compassion and Altruism Research Education at Stanford. We're also joined by Susie Hall from the Centurions Program of the Chamber of Commerce and organizer of Kinder KC. I want to talk more with Susie about the Kinder KC program, but we have a full board of phone calls of folks wanting to share their stories of kindness. Let me take a couple of those. This is Bazia in Kansas City, Missouri. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I was calling because I had a really interesting experience back in 2003 on my way to Missouri. I came from Seattle by train with my 1.5 and 2.5-year-old daughters. It was just me, the girls, and 3 bags. And about halfway there in Oregon, the train had to stop, and we all had to get off and get on a bus to cross the pass because the train couldn't get through. And I was just panicked, because I was by myself. I had 2 very small children. It was the middle of the night. And I just sat there for a moment, and this guy walked up to me. He was an older gentleman, and he said, "You give me the big one, and I'll take one of your bags. You take the little one, and I'll come back for your bags." And I was so shocked and so tired and so scared that I just gave him my daughter. You know, I stood up, and we went to the bus station, and he ended up helping me, not just in Oregon, but he helped me in Bakersfield when I needed to get off the train. He helped me at the L.A. train station when I needed to get the girls on. He helped me at the Albuquerque station. He pretty much helped me from Oregon all the way down to L.A. and all the way across to the La Plata Station in Missouri. And he never really said why. He just, and we didn't really have anything in common. He was older and white. I was younger and black. And he just helped me the entire time. And it really kind of made me look at Missouri and the Midwest and people of the Midwest a little different because, you know, I had no experience with that.
Did you ever see him again?
I never saw him again. I never knew why he helped me. He must have saw the panic on my face because I didn't know how I was going to get two kids and three bags, you know, half a mile to the bus station. And he just helped me along the way. And I don't know. He's always had an effect on me, and I've never been able to see him again. But it was wonderful.
How do you say your name, Bazia? Did I say it right?
You were close. It's Beasia.
Beasia, thank you so much for calling. I really appreciate your sharing that story.
Okay, thank you. I'll take my comments off the air.
All right, thanks so much. Let's take another story from Linister in Volker. Linister, welcome to the program.
Yes, well, I was walking back from the grocery store 2 miles from my place. It was very hot, and a car stopped. The young lady said, "Would you like a ride?" And me and my two bags of groceries got in her car. I thought maybe I knew her, but I didn't know her. She was a KU Med student, and she's from a small town. People in small towns just sort of do that thing.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, Linister. Thanks for sharing that. I appreciate it.
Got another story, too, which is interesting.
Go for it.
A young lady friend of mine, she got sick, and she let her hair grow a long way down to the small of her back. She had dark brown hair. And then when she died of cancer, her hair was made into wigs for children that also needed wigs that had cancer. It was very, very nice. That's just the way she was.
So sometimes those acts of kindness extend even beyond one's own lifetime.
Yeah, it was very just the kind of person she was.
Linister, thank you so much for calling today.
Yes, thank you.
816-235-2888 is the number to call. We have an email at centralstandard@kcur.org from Deanie, this is on Facebook. You can go to the KCUR Facebook page. Deanie wrote, "I often do things just to be kind, but I'm often met with distrust by the people I do this for. They expect me to have an ulterior motive." Susie Hall of Kinder KC, did any of your centurions who went out to do these acts of kindness encounter that resistance?
You know, I think that was one of the surprising things that many of the people commented on when they got back, is they said whether it was just going over to give somebody a popsicle or a cold drink, people would look at them just like that with some disbelief and some distrust and just not sure about exactly what the motive was behind what they got.
You know, I'm curious, Dr. Doty, the story we heard from Linister in the Volker neighborhood about someone from a small town. He said people from small towns just seem to be that way. Is that something that you found in your research? Is there more compassion and kindness among certain groups of people, like people from small towns?
I have not done that research, and I'm not sure if it's specifically been done. But I think, as an example, only 5,000 years ago was when we started living in cities, and 10,000 years ago, the primary survival strategy of our species was as hunter-gatherers in tribes to 10 to 50. And there is a tendency within, if you will, what you defined as your group, which I think you could probably say is a small community, to help others, because in the early days of our species, when you banded together, you protected yourself against potential threats from either large mammals or from other groups. And as a result, there was a tendency to make sure that your own group was protected. So you can imagine if you're from a small town and you have a sense of community and caring within that community, that you may not realize it, but there is this desire, if you will, to help those within your community. And that's often a very strong desire.
816-235-2888 is the number to call. Courtney in Overland Park, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I was just going to bring in a comment. When I was born, my mother had me in the nursery and everything, and one of the nurses gave her this statue of a little girl who was praying with strawberry blonde hair, just like mine when I was born. And the nurse said, just this gentleman gave it to her to give to the girl with the orange hair. And my mother, ever since then, has called that person who gave that statue to me my guardian angel.
Hmm. And so this, here you were the recipient of something that happened even when you were first born, before you were aware
of it. When I was like 2 days old, yes.
And what does that mean to you now, Courtney?
Oh, my gosh, that is my most prized possession.
Why is that important?
Because I also believe that that was my guardian angel. I mean, we don't know this person. We had never seen this person before. My mother, like the nurse said, this gentleman just came up and said, give this to the girl with the orange hair. And so ever since then, that statue, or that, it's actually a nightlight, but I don't have the light in it anymore, has represented, you know, my angel watching over me.
Courtney, that's a great story. Thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Thank you so much.
Let's take one more call from Jennifer in Kansas City, Missouri. Jennifer, welcome to the program.
Hi. Yeah, I wanted to tell a story about a couple of years ago when I was going to New York and flying to Minneapolis, and our flight got delayed, and we ended up having to stay all night in Minneapolis. And my seatmate was a gentleman from Egypt, and he spoke English, very wonderful gentleman. We got to know each other. I helped him navigate that whole process of getting his ticket reissued and getting to the hotel. I ate dinner with him. We ate breakfast in the morning. And, you know, I just felt compelled to help it was only because he was my seatmate, to help him navigate, you know, that process of your flight getting delayed. And now I have a friend who lives in Egypt.
So you, in this case, are the giver, but you're saying there's a real benefit to you from having done this.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. No, we still exchange emails. He doesn't live in Cairo, so he says his family's not in danger with all the recent violence in Egypt. So, no, we keep in touch, and, yeah, I feel wonderful having a friendship with him.
Thank you so much for the call, Jennifer.
Okay.
Susie Hall, this Kinder KC program, I don't want to sound cynical. Why did the Chamber of Commerce why did the Centurions want to put an event together like this? I mean, it is good publicity.
It is good publicity, and I think that, you know, throughout the year of our Centurions program, we do organize service projects. So we will go help at homeless shelters, etc. And the challenge with this day was really to just go out and make it a Kinder KC. So basic and very important.
Well, we'll continue the conversation about what makes for a Kinder KC, random acts of kindness that you, our listeners, and maybe others have done for you. 816-235-2888 is the number to call. If you want to share a story of when you've been the giver or the recipient of an act of kindness, we'll continue our conversation also with Dr. James Doty, an expert, an academic scholar on compassion and altruism. Stay with us. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR.
On the kindness of strangers.
The immortal Vivian Lee in The Streetcar Named Desire. The kindness of strangers is what we're talking about today on Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. We're talking about it here in Kansas City and in your life as well. What difference does it make that people are kind? Why are some people kind and others not? If you have a story of kindness that you've experienced, or maybe you've had the opportunity to share, give us a call. 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888 to tell your story. You can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. My guests are Susie Hall, co-organizer of Kinder KC, a program of the Centurions in the Chamber of Commerce here in town, and also Dr. James Doty, who's a neurosurgery professor and director of the Center for Compassion and Altruism Research, Education, at Stanford University. Dr. Doty, I wonder, what keeps people from being more generous or kind? You've talked about the evolutionary benefits. You've talked about just the good feelings that it gives people. Why are some people not kind?
Well, as I indicated earlier, it is potentially possible that there may be some issues related to gene expression, which make them feel less connected to others. Another factor is that there's an area of our brain associated with the term reptilian brain, or the area called the amygdala, which is a very old part of our brain, which responds to threat. And when somebody sees another suffering, they have to, of course, first determine that they are suffering and have an emotional connection to that, utilizing what we call our mirror neuron system. But the other thing is they have to determine whether that person, or if you will, engaging with that person to relieve their suffering is a threat to them in regard to either being hurt or even dying. And that has to be overcome because this primitive part of our brain, its desire is to have us survive. So that's the first thing that has to be overcome. Is this person a threat to me, or engaging with them a potential threat to me? And so that is potentially one component.
So I'm imagining that scenario playing out with something like deciding whether to pick up a hitchhiker, for example.
Exactly. Or if you're in a bad neighborhood and you see somebody suffering who may be of a different ethnic background, which you feel uncomfortable with, even though it may be hard to admit that. But I think that's the reality in some instances. And there are a couple other components. One is studies have been shown that people from, if you will, higher socioeconomic status have difficulty processing people's expressions who indicate that they are in need. And the reality is probably that those individuals, since oftentimes they don't necessarily need the help of other individuals because of their status, have not developed the ability to really understand facial expressions because they haven't had a need to. And this could also result in individuals not recognizing subtle situations where someone is in need.
Susie Hall of the Centurions Program, you've told me that there are many other stories, some pretty remarkable things that people did, creative ideas. What's another example of an act of kindness that was undertaken on this day?
Well, this didn't directly affect somebody, I think, necessarily during the day, but one group headed to the library and stuck $1 bills in various library books throughout the library so that anybody that comes along to check out that book in the future will have a little surprise of a $1 bill there.
It's a way to promote reading. How do you answer folks who say, you know, that money could have gone to someone who was really hungry or thirsty? What's the benefit of putting dollar bills in the library books?
Well, you know, that's a good question. And I think the goal of this is if you put a smile on somebody's face at a library, who knows what that person will then do and hopefully go pay it forward. Mm-hmm. And that was part of our challenge, too, for the day was the random acts of kindness that we performed was a little asked to go pay it forward and kind somebody else in the day.
You're using kind as a verb.
Mm-hmm.
Kinded
yes.
people. What you're talking about, it sounds like, is sort of changing the culture as much as changing any particular individual person's life at one moment.
Well, you know, that as we were planning this, we started thinking, well, how big can this be? And so if you think of sort of the organic growth of the kindness movement, and I think what has been interesting from our group of the 80 that went out, as we go on, I got a text from one of my friends, and he said, that day changed me. I was in Philadelphia, and I paid for the train fare for the person behind me. And so we have found as a group that we are just much more aware as we go out and want to continue just little acts like that.
816-235-2888 is the number to call. Joy is calling from Weatherby Lake. Joy, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
I just wanted to share an experience I had many years ago. I am in my 50s, but right when I graduated from high school, I got to go to southern India, and I spent a lot of time there. And I didn't have much money, and I found myself staying on a beautiful beach with my friend, and we ran out of money. And this was before the days of cell phones and Internet and all that. So, I mean, we were really in trouble because we weren't anywhere near our home base. And we went to sleep one night, and the next morning we got up, and under our door, a man that had just lost his wife and was part of this group that was kind of hanging out on this beach had slipped an envelope with enough money for us to get home.
Wow. And you're still remembering that story all these years later.
No, yeah. Yeah, my time in India had a profound effect on me, and in large part because of the people.
Well, Joy, thank you so much for sharing that and allowing us to share a little of the joy of that expression of kindness.
You're welcome. Thanks for the show.
You bet. Let's talk to Mary in Overland Park. Mary, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. A couple of years ago, I was walking into a CVS, and I was walking through in between the cars, and I stumbled upon a woman who had fallen and cracked her head open, and she was an elderly woman, and I noticed that other people had just walked by this woman, and I bent down and stopped and asked her if she was okay, and she was clearly disoriented and needing assistance, and luckily, we were close to CVS, so I helped her walk inside and contact a family member to come pick her up and potentially take her to the hospital because she had some deep cuts on her head. And the reason that I did this was because I have a grandmother, I have family members, and I would hope that another person would be able to do that for my family if something like that ever happened. It's important to recognize that, you know, there's a time where I may need help, and so hopefully somebody would be kind enough to stop and take care of me if that happened.
Thank you so much, Mary, for sharing that.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. We had an email from Ellen in Mission Hills who wrote, my daughter and I were trying to figure out a pay box for parking on a New Orleans street, and the credit card slot wouldn't work, so we were looking for change, and a woman dressed for work stepped in with a handful of quarters and started feeding them in for us. She said, just tell me when it's enough. She was very nice but businesslike, as if she did this every day. And she said when we got back from running our errand, we still had over an hour of time left, so we gave it to a man who came along and was digging into his pockets, looking for change too. He was happy to have it. We were able to pass on her good deed, even though we didn't deserve credit for it. Susie Hall, it sounds like a lot of that went on Kinder KC Day for you.
That did. You know, we had feedback on our Facebook page and then also on Twitter of some people who received some of our kindness acts, and then they said, oh, it's upon us now to take those and go forward with them.
816-235-2888 is the number to call. Meredith in Prairie Village called. Welcome to the program.
Hey, big shout out to my friend Justin, who I know is listening, and he's leaving. So bye-bye, Justin. Guys, this is an unbelievable story, and I know, like, some people have probably already heard this story because we have a lot of mutual listeners. But a couple of years ago, I was actually out leaving one of our local establishments, and I actually was about to get carjacked. Well, I did get carjacked, and this person came up to me out of the blue, and I had my window open, and he proceeded to forcefully work his way into the car, and I was able to push him off, but he grabbed my wallet, which is a really special wallet. It was like a kind of a memorabilia thing, and ran off, and it had tons of money in it, and these two guys that were across the street at a bus stop just ran over and, like lightning, ran after the guy and got the wallet back. And then they came back and they asked me if I was okay. And they waited with me while I waited for the cops. And then they never asked for a reward. They wouldn't take a reward. They absolutely just would not take it, no matter what I did. And I got their names, but I was in such a state of shock that I just, you know, forgot their names, and I've never seen them since. But if they're listening, they were just really amazing. And they had, you know, just like superpowers.
And
it was really unbelievable.
And Meredith, do you feel like because you were treated with such kindness that people took a risk to do something for you, that it did that change you in some way? Did it make you more generous?
I would say definitely. Yeah, of course. It just made me, you know, when people have those stories about their guardian angel, or they have stories about how it just restores their faith in humanity. It was one of those days, you know, it was one of those moments where it was so unbelievable and so magical that it just really uplifted me, I think, in a really powerful way.
Meredith, thanks for the call. Dr. James Doty, you've been talking about sort of the biological and evolutionary reasons. All of this research on how kindness happens and the impact of kindness on people, I wonder if that suggests there's a next step. Is it possible for us to make people more kind? I mean, can you imagine is there a shot you can get to make you more generous, more compassionate?
Let me respond on a couple levels. First of all, a number of studies have been shown that simply watching an act of kindness motivates one to be more kind. Two, receiving kindness does the same, as your guest has indicated. Three, I mentioned earlier this love or bonding hormone called oxytocin, and we know that in the context of, if you will, what you define as your in-group, if you give oxytocin to an individual intranasally, that it can actually make you feel a closer bond or connection to that person, which would indicate that you would be, if you will, more kind. And then the third thing is that there have been studies done within our own group at CCARE, if you will, which is the acronym for our center, and also recently published by Dr. Wang at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, which showed that utilizing, if you will, compassion training can actually have a profound effect on an individual in regard to them being more kind to others. So you can actually promote or train kindness so that whatever your genetic potential is, you can actually maximize that through certain types of mind training.
So it's even easier than a shot. It can be given intranasally. You can actually have an inhaler of kindness.
In certain circumstances, that's correct.
I'm oversimplifying. We had an email from David who says, your discussion of kindness is interesting, but you're missing an important point. The number of people who are around to help someone influences whether an individual will help. The more people who are around, the less likely people are to help. In psychology, this is known as the bystander effect. I don't know if David's right or wrong about that. Dr. Doty?
No, he's absolutely correct, because it gets back to, if you will, this reptilian part of our brain where, first of all, we're assessing danger to ourselves. And oftentimes, when there are a number of people, the tendency is to say, well, somebody else is going to intervene. And that is the result of that is, if you will, this bystander effect. But there's an interesting program that's been developed by Phil Zimbardo, who you may recall did the Stanford Prison Experiment many years ago. But this is something called the Heroic Imagination Project, where it trains individuals, especially young people, to, number one, promote this idea that being a hero is not an isolated event. And in fact, this can occur on a daily basis in regard to essentially seeing another person suffering. But also with intent, when you see a situation, as you just described, which could result in the bystander effect, that you immediately intervene. The other argument for the bystander effect is that if everyone in a group immediately jumped in to participate in, let's say, trying to save the life of another or something, it could result in everyone being hurt or killed. And therefore, in some way protects the gene pool.
Carol in Overland Park, Kansas. Carol, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Nice topic. Nice positive topic. In the last year of my dad's life, he was a widower. He liked to eat out sometimes. And it's unusual to see a person dining out alone in a restaurant, in fast food places maybe, but it's really pretty unusual in restaurants. And he was eating out by himself one day, and some anonymous person in the restaurant picked up his tab. Huh. And he was very moved by that, which has led me to do the same whenever I can, whenever I notice it in a restaurant, if there's somebody dining alone out, engineer to have their tab picked up. I'd like to know from the doctor, is there a correlation among, if you're in a church group or a philanthropic group or a civic organization and you meet with these people on a regular basis and get reminded of, I don't know, a little higher calling, do those people exhibit that tendency more frequently, or is it really totally random?
That's a great question, Carol. I mean, Dr. Doty, almost every religion asks its participants to give, to be generous.
Well, I don't think there's any question that within a group, whether it be a religious group or some sort of philanthropic or community service group, that one, clearly there is reinforcement about this type of behavior, and two, as we discussed the science earlier, such acts reinforce one doing more acts. Now, the caveat of that sometimes, though, is that, as an example, if we look at religious groups, oftentimes their kindness is very much focused on individuals who have the same belief system as them. And so there is a little bit of a danger when somebody talks about kindness to strangers versus kindness to people who we define as like us. And this is an issue, actually, between, if you will, in-group versus out-group. Clearly, if you have a definition of your in-group, and usually this is at a subconscious level, it's much easier to demonstrate acts of kindness versus in somebody you might feel uncomfortable with or, in fact, perceive as an enemy in regard to being kind or even a different religious orientation than yourself. And this is a holdover, if you will, from our evolution, where, again, there is a tendency inherent with us to describe or ascribe to a tribe, be it a religion or other group, where it makes us feel comfortable to be part of, and oftentimes these are groups that are similar to us. One of the challenges of our species going forward is a recognition that, in fact, we are all part of the same tribe, and, in fact, our home or the area in which we live is not just a city or a community, but the world, and, in fact, that we are all interdependent. And it is when this reality is understood that hopefully we'll be able to expand outside of, quote-unquote, our in-group and embrace everyone and do acts of kindness to all, recognizing that when we do so, we're doing it to our brother, our sister, our mother, our father.
Susie Hall, the group from Centurions that went out and did this, what do you see as sort of the, if you had to sum up the learnings, the takeaways from this, how was your community, how was your life changed by this experience?
You know, I think as I mentioned earlier, the group that had a little bit more time ahead to plan the day found themselves noticing all these random acts of kindness that were performed to them that they might not have been aware of or paid attention to before. And simple things like today when I was running into the station, a car stopped for me and let me pass in front of it. And I don't know that I would have paid that much attention to that beforehand. And so I think the group as a whole just brought a bigger awareness to their everyday lives and the kind things that others do for them, whether it's within their inner circle or just the people they pass on the street.
816-235-2888. Leslie in Kansas City, Missouri. Welcome to Central Standard.
Hi. Yes, I was taught growing up, you know, you do simple kind things like hold the door for someone, you know, as they're walking through, or, you know, just little things like that. And I really learned to expect a thank you as a result of those kind acts, but I've been really trying to evolve past that to just doing kind things for doing them for the sake of being kind instead of expecting that thank you, and it's been a challenge, but it's, I think, something that I'm growing into and really trying to focus on going forward, so that it's not like you do something nice and you expect that thank you in return.
Thanks so much for sharing that, Leslie. I appreciate that perspective. Susie, was anyone surprised at the lack of response that they got?
You know, as a group, we did not have an overwhelming response about that. I think that gratitude was a part of the day, as far as everybody had some thank you notes. And so some people wrote thank you notes to the bus drivers up at the airport, and people who don't necessarily get a lot of thanks in their everyday jobs that way. So gratitude was a part of it, but I don't think there was an overwhelming response that way.
Let's talk to James in Overland Park. James, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. I love the topic. I just wanted to ask what the nature versus nurture aspect may be involved, because I was fortunate to be raised in a very kind and giving household. Things like hearing stories like my father and mother going out for their anniversary dinner, and there was a stand selling flowers downtown, and my dad bought every single flower there and told the guy who was running the store to give one flower to every woman that passed by. And so that put into me, you know, this feeling of needing to help others, and one time having to buy diapers even though I was short on money myself for the person in front of me who couldn't afford them with his groceries. And I just wanted to see if you see a correlation there between.
Great. Great question, James. For Dr. Doty, is it something that is learned from parents?
I think that's certainly the case, that when individuals are exposed to people who are more generous or express gratitude or kindness, that it is more likely to rub off on them. Although we don't have all the information regarding kindness or compassion, if you will, we do know that there's a great correlation of kindness with happiness, and we know that there are estimates that about 50% of one's level of happiness is genetically based, and the other is, if you will, environmentally based. So I think that as we get more information about this topic, that we will find it will be a very similar type of ratio.
Susie, very quickly, what's the future of Kinder Kansas City?
Well, the future of Kinder Kansas City is with Kansas City. We hope everyone out there can spread acts of kindness and be a little bit of kinder. And we have KinderKC.com and Facebook page for Kinder KC.
So check it out. That's Susie Hall. She's the co-organizer of Kinder KC, an event organized by the Centurions Program at the Chamber of Commerce. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Brian.
And Dr. James Doty. He's a neurosurgery professor and director of the Center for Compassion and Altruism Research Education at Stanford. Dr. Doty, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, Brian. It's really been a pleasure.
You can subscribe to our podcast or hear this conversation again. You can hear any of our previous shows from the Central Standard page at kcur.org. Join us tomorrow as we celebrate and explore the MLS, Major League Soccer All-Star Game. Up to date's coming up next with a look at a medicine that attacks a disease at the genes, as well as photographer Linda Solomon. That medicine doesn't attack the photographer, which is a separate segment. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton with Claire McInerney and Ross Steinmetz. I'm Brian Ellison. This is KCUR.